seems to be working. 10, 11, and 12. In the big book, page 85, it, right after the promises that we read last night, after the first nine steps in step 10, it says in the first paragraph at the end of the promises, that is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So it says the obsession will be lifted, these promises will be working for us as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. In the next paragraph down, it says, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So, maintenance of our spiritual condition, daily reprieve. I am not cured. The disease is arrested by following this process. But if you want to hold on to it, you got to keep working. And in general, what 10, 11, and 12 are about is continuing to do all of the things that got me here in the first place, plus some more stuff. The OA solution, there's a lot of different ways of looking at this, but this is kind of a brief, based upon everything we've talked about in the last 72 hours or however long we've been here. The OA solution is physical, emotional, and spiritual. Physical is learning the nature of my food addiction and a new way of eating that keeps it in check. So learning about the food, defining my food clearly, developing a plan of eating, following that. It's the physical part of the program. It gets me to abstaining, abstinence, clear head. That's one third of the three-legged stool of recovery. Emotional solution is discovering the attitudes and beliefs and values that are counterproductive to me living a good life and to changing them. Changing those things that need to be changed, and we spent lots of time on that yesterday afternoon. Spiritual solution, from my perspective, or just in a net, journey within. A journey within to meet my true self, to get in touch with the spirit within, which some people call God, and to discover my purpose, that is, why I have been given the gift of life. Why am I here? What's it about? What's my purpose? Why do I stay here? It's probably a useful place for me to define abstinence, physical and emotional and spiritual abstinence. Physical abstinence for me means right eating, not eating compulsively, following a plan of eating, not using food as a mood-altering drug. So not overeating, not eating my trigger foods. While abstinence is not eating compulsively, physical recovery is not just that. Physical recovery is not eating compulsively, maintaining a healthy body weight, or as the new definition says, being on the way to that. So that's you know, you can be abstinent and still be 300 pounds, and if you're still staying at 300 pounds year after year, there's a problem there. Emotional abstinence, for me, is having a mind free of negativity, acceptance of reality as it is, dealing with reality rationally rather than hysterically or by drugging myself with food, wearing the world like a loose garment, as somebody has said, a nice phrase that I like, easy does it, meeting calamity with serenity. Phrase out of the big book, meeting calamity with serenity, taking full responsibility for my feelings, my behavior, and my life. Full responsibility for my behavior, my feelings, and my life. Spiritual abstinence, for me, this is just done, you won't find this in a book anyplace, is alignment of my life with what I believe is God's plan for me. What you do find in the book, in the instruction books, which is what I consider the big book in the 2, 12, and 12s, it's the instructions. What you do find there is this whole idea that getting well is about moving from self-centeredness to God-centeredness, from thinking about what I want, me, want, to what's God's will for me. So it's about aligning my will with God's will. We all got willpower. We have to use the willpower in lots of different ways to get along in life and deal with life. But the idea is to be aligned with what we think is God's will for me. So spiritual abstinence is alignment of my life with what I believe is God's plan for me. Trusting that God loves me unconditionally, and again, these are just dons, unconditionally, will not give me more than he and I can handle. Though I'm expected to do my part, you must have gotten that message from me, that I have a part. I consider my life a co-creation with God. I'm not a puppet. I've been given the intelligence, the brain, to make decisions and take actions and make choices. And I can choose to leave here and go to the nearest pizza shop or Dunkin' Donut, or I can choose to get in the car and drive home, whatever. I can choose to do whatever I damn well please, eat whatever I damn well please. I'm a free person. So making good choices. Practicing the presence of God every day for me, and we're going to talk about that in a minute with step 11. Leaving results and tomorrow to God, but doing my part today. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I need to plan for tomorrow. I need to do my part, prepare myself. Trusting that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me. Trusting that God will give me what I need when its time comes. So those are my definitions of physical abstinence, emotional abstinence, and spiritual abstinence. And those are all concepts which I just constantly think about. Am I emotionally abstinent today? Am I spiritually abstinent? Am I connected? Am I calm? I like to use the phrase sometimes, calm head, steady heart. Calm mind, steady heart. Calm mind, steady heart. Calm mind, steady heart. It's just a little catchphrase for me, like a mantra, that helps me remember emotional abstinence and how I'm trying to deal with the world and what I'm doing.
Calm,
C-O-L-M, mm-hmm. Mind, and steady. Steady heart. What did I say? C-A-L-M, calm. Quiet, calm, level, as opposed to crazy, frenetic. Dealing with the world as it is in a calm way. All right. Maybe a useful place to also talk about, we talked about the promises and the what happens if we do these steps, particularly 4 through 9, the action steps. I have some ideas about the things that lead me into trouble, which will be a bridge into 10, 11, and 12. The things that lead me into trouble. Remember, we talked way back when, sometime I mentioned what it takes to get well. And we went down. I went down through a bunch of things: abstinence, gathering of hope, gathering of courage, getting honest, discriminating, actions, etc. And this is a similar list of wrong thinking that leads me to trouble, which is just a generic way of saying relapse. But it can be emotional trouble too. You know, I can be emotionally binging. Very useful concept to me. I can be emotionally binging and still not eating. Yet, the food is always the last to go. By the time I have picked up the first bite, I have already gone through a spiritual and emotional binge of some sort to get there. So when you're picking up the food, a lot went before. One of the things I always do with sponsees who have a slip is have them do an inventory of the slip, which means looking very closely at what happened, what you did, and then back up as if you were shooting a movie over the 24 hours that preceded the bite. An inventory, a slip inventory. And always there's the emotional stuff. You just don't walk around and pick up something out of the blue when you're feeling really nice and mellow. It doesn't work that way. So think of that as the bite. First bite is always the last thing. So some of the wrong thinking that leads me into trouble. One, thinking about what the world is giving me rather than what I can give to the world. Big Book tells me my purpose is to see what I can give. How can I be of use is the phrase out of the Big Book. So that's a different paradigm from the how do I get what I want. What is it giving me? It's not giving me. It owes me and it's not giving me. Two, obsessing on problems rather than possible solutions. Or letting go and letting God. I think we've talked about that in 6 and 7. Focusing on the solutions, not the problem. Focus on the solution. Again, quote out of the big book, which I gave you sometime yesterday, right? If I focus on the problem increases. If I focus on the solution increases, etc. It's out of Dr. Alcoholic Addict in the old book, Acceptance in the New Book. Three, self-reliance. Remember, these are things that lead me to trouble. Self-reliance, not asking God and others for help, depending upon my own self-will. Four, letting up on prayer and meditation, not nurturing my conscious contact. Conscious contact simply means, it's another word for awareness of the presence of. Awareness of the presence of some spirit within me or around me or in the universe, whatever it is, awareness of something. So connection too. So letting up on prayer and meditation, not nurturing, that's conscious contact. And that conscious contact for me can come in a lot of different places, not just sitting quietly in the chair, but out in nature, walking in the woods, walking in a field, beside a still, calm lake, on a beach, on a sand dune by a beach. And I'm thinking of a particular beach in Massachusetts, in Cape Cod. Five, letting up on service to other compulsive eaters. Nothing keeps me in better shape than trying to be of help to others. In Bill's story, there's a line in there toward the end that says, when all other measures fail, anybody know the rest of it? Reach out and try to help somebody else. When everything else fails, when the phone calls fail, when the literature fails, when you can't do anything, think of somebody that you can help and try to help them. And you suddenly get out of yourself. And you don't pick up the bite. Six, forgetting that I am an addict and therefore not using my mood-altering drugs, i.e. column A, or overeating itself, is the most important thing in my life. Forgetting that I am an addict and therefore not using my drug is the most important thing in my life. Because if I pick up that drug, I run the risk of descending back into the hell from which I came and screwing up all the rest of my life. And lastly, not working and living the steps, traditions, and tools, the basic disciplines of the program. Not working and living 12, 12, and 8, and 9 is the way I say it. But I always add the slogans because slogans are the shorthand. Traditions and add slogans to that. I don't use concepts in this personal recovery context, but could use concepts. Just as the traditions are we don't study the traditions here because the personal recovery that they're after is really in the steps, but then you begin to further enhance relationships through the traditions, through understanding that the traditions are all about relationships. You know, in the OA 12 and 12. Well, let me come back to that because we're going to talk about practicing these principles and I'm going to talk about the principles of the steps and the traditions. So I'll come back to that. So there are principles in there. Okay, so I said this once or twice before, just to reiterate my feeling about the steps. The steps teach me to become receptive to the healing grace of God. It's God that heals, not me, but I have to take a whole bunch of action in order to receive that miracle. So ultimately, it's something bigger than me that changes me, but I have to do a lot of footwork. So the old axiom of trusting God to get you to shore, but keep rowing anyway, really. Oh, was it? I did not read for today. Today, that's where it comes from, right? Trust God to get you to shore, but. Well, that's good to see that there's somebody reading books. Okay, that's a good thing.
Can you read the 12 steps teach me to be?
Yeah. The 12 steps teach me to become receptive to the healing grace of God. It's God that heals, not me, but I have a bunch of action to take in order to gain that, I believe. A little bit later, we'll go through what I went through Friday night, my short version of the steps, kind of a summary again, and we'll see how we did on that. 10, 11, and 12. Okay. Basic inventory I've got to keep doing in order to stay in fit spiritual condition, in order to maintain what I've got. I've got to keep doing what got me here. I need to keep doing this inventory. I need to keep reflecting on how I'm doing. It's kind of like quality control, as I mentioned yesterday. Checking up on myself in an organized way. In the big book, it talks, let's see, if you've got a handout on this, you do have a handout, right? Step 10, page 14, big book, says, look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I've mentioned that before. And then it tells me what to do with them. Ask God to remove it. God, please take away my fill in the blank. Discuss this with someone immediately, like my sponsor. Make amends quickly if I've harmed someone. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Affirm that love and tolerance of others is my code. Love and tolerance is my code. Love and tolerance. Do you know how many times the word tolerance is mentioned in the big book? 19.
That's it?
19. It's a very important. Only one mentioned more than that, other than the God, is acceptance. Tolerance, 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 tolerance of others. Patience and patient and tolerant of others. And here it turns up again. Love and tolerance of others is my code. Learning to accept people as they are. In other words, stop trying to control the world. Stop putting my expectations, my shoulds and oughts on everybody, and let them be. Focus on myself and do what I have to do to be of use. So, tolerance, tolerance, tolerance. And we get such a wonderful opportunity in our meetings to learn to practice tolerance. But that's what they're about. That's part of the fellowship. Learning to accept differences. Learning to accept others. In all stages of recovery or disease. In all shapes and sizes. In various manifestations. All races and colors. All ethnicities. All religions. All everything. So we get to practice in our meetings. And really practice at intergroup meetings to learn how to live a life of tolerance with our peers, with our associates, with our work people, with our family. That's what we learn it in the meetings, right? And if we apply what we learn in the meetings, it really affects our life. So how do we do this? There's one thing that the big book mentions. In the OA 12 and 12, in the 10th step, it talks about the things that you see on the chart there. What things are going well for me? What am I grateful for? Am I aware of a former defect that's been removed? Did I act on faith? Was I accepting and forgiving? Did I let go of a former resentment? Was I selfless? Did I exhibit any other positive character traits? And there'll be more of this when we look at step 11. In just a moment in the big book, it suggests what we do in the evening at the finish of the day. It says another inventory. So it doesn't make any difference how you do this, whether it's in a very structured way or whether you use some form. And I have done over the years all forms of a 10th step. One of the most basic things that you can do, if I can find it, I can't quite find what I'm looking for, but it's just use these slogans. Yeah. This is a real simple one. You can say, one day at a time, do I live in today or do I waste endless energy regretting the past and worrying about the future? Not a bad question to ask yourself. Easy does it. Does my thinking and life resemble a NASCAR race? Overwork, overplay, overstudy, overplan, overeat, over everything?
Yes.
Good question to ask yourself. First things first. Am I overwhelmed by all I have to do? The end result too often being I end up paralyzed and do nothing. If you have a list of 100 things to do and you're feeling overwhelmed, my first question to you always will be, back to Charlie and his tough love, who made the list? So it's us that makes the list. Almost always, we make the list in our head of 100 things to do. And then we drive ourselves crazy because we can't get the list done. So back to living life in chunks, little pieces, doing the doable. First things first. Don't be overwhelmed. Cut the list down. Live and let live. Do I accept others as they are, or do I impose all my values, shoulds, and oughts on them? The result being, I'm always in conflict, if not outwardly, certainly in my mind. So back to the controlling. Do I accept others as they are, or do I try to impose all my values, shoulds, and oughts on them? Let go and let God. Am I in charge of the world? Do I leave in God's hands all the things I cannot change or control, which is most everything, except myself? Do I try to control the results of my actions when, in fact, the only thing I can control the results when I can only control the actions, right? As I said a couple of times, I think, I'm in charge of actions, God's in charge of results. I'm in charge of input, God's in charge of output. I can plant seeds, but I can't plant results. In OA, we plant seeds in people by giving them, hopefully giving them hope by sharing our own stuff, but we can't make them well, we can't make them willing to take the actions. I can't make any of you take any of the actions that you know in your head you probably ought to take after going through all the thinking about the things that we've been talking about the last 2 days. But I plant the seeds and then leave the results to God. So I'm not in charge of getting anybody well. I'm not in charge of getting my sponsee well. If he or she doesn't do the work, they don't do the work. It's an important, important idea. I do the best I can, and then it's up to other people. All right. Step 10, keep growing, keep doing all the things that got me here. Oh, here's the one I was looking for. Some of the shortest ones I do sometimes. How was it living with me today? Yes, how was it working with me today? How did I do today on the character defects that I'm working on correcting? If somebody is just working through the steps for the first time, we've identified in step 6 and 7 those things to be worked on. And so the 10th step is the obvious place to say, how am I doing on changing those things? Right? This keeps it in your mind every day, every day, every day. Back to the practice, practice, practice. No drill, no skill. Keep doing it, keep doing it. How am I doing on that? Character defect, whatever it is. Maybe it's acceptance. Maybe it's criticizing. Maybe it's complaining. How am I doing on the complaining today? How am I doing on the negativity? How am I doing on the criticizing? You know, am I keeping my mouth shut? Whatever it is that you may be working on. Keeping my mouth shut and not telling that 16-year-old girl what to do with her hair or the earrings or the tattoos or the whatever, whatever. How did I do today as a spouse? How did I do today as an employee? How did I do today as a parent? How did I do today as an OAer? How did I do today as a friend? As a son? I don't know why that's in pencil. But it is. It's an add-on. Okay. Everybody get the idea of step 10? You got to keep checking yourself. Check yourself against the things that you're trying to change and do it every day. And as I said yesterday, the big book talks about the watch out for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it says when these occur. So that's an ongoing 24/7. This is not a once a day thing. This is an ongoing 24/7. So, you know, eventually living the steps means always having that going on. Always saying to yourself, wait a minute, what did I just do? And fixing it if there's an amends to be made. Remember, the second part of the 10th step is to keep it clean as you go. We've cleaned out in step 9. We don't need to accumulate more stuff. Let's keep it clean as we go. If you do something that requires an amend, then do it as you go. Somebody someplace said, don't ever go to bed angry, you know. Clean it up, clean it up, clean it up. Yes?
Do you find that as you're in the midst of having an emotional whatever, that in the moment you realize, oh, this is happening, and can clean it up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It becomes instinctual. After a while, you just, that's the living of the steps. You're not doing the steps. The first time you go through them, you're doing them. But eventually, it becomes built into your thinking, into all the cells of your body, and you just, it becomes a way of thinking and automatic. Yes?
Okay. Part of him and promptly admitted it.
Yeah.
Again, I would say, I behaved in this way, this is what I did wrong, and I'm sorry. Kind of back when the same ideas as...
Yes, it's the ninth step.
It's the ninth step.
The second part of the tenth step is a redoing of the ninth step, except doing it right away.
Gotcha.
Betty.
I was admitting it, I'm making the amend.
Probably. Yes. It's making the amend, fixing it.
And that's so that we won't be carrying the baggage.
So we don't start to accumulate the baggage that we cleaned up, cleaned out, flushed down the toilet in step nine. Mm-hmm. Now, in your handout, the mother of all 10-step inventories.
The father.
Father of all step inventories. Is this list here, page 15?
Yes.
All right. This is an exercise thing, and from time to time, I will do this. Mostly, I just look at the top five or six, but from time to time, I'll go through the whole thing, and just to show you what it is, you see the left column says living in, the right column says rather than, right? So back to the problem solution. The problem, antidote, the defect, antidote. And I have little boxes there that say, okay, how am I doing today living in acceptance rather than resentment and anger? And I can put a check mark in, more often than not, I'm doing okay. Or sometimes in the middle box, or not much. Okay? And I can go on down, and the interesting thing is to see the pattern of check marks. And over time, notice, hopefully, that the check marks begin to move to the left. All my compulsive, obsessive, technical background is now coming in here. But it's a useful thing from time to time, and nobody can do this every day. But you get the idea. It's a systematic way of taking my particular stuff, and this list happens to be in my order for Don. You could have a list that might have different stuff up at the top. It's whatever is important to you. I saw a hand in the back first. Didn't I see a hand? Yes.
But you've answered it.
Okay. Yes.
What about abstinence? How do you check in with that? I mean, I guess that's a...
Well, you either are or you're not.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's not a little bit, a lot.
Right, right. I understand. It's like there's a reason it's not on this list because
yes.
It's black and white.
I have to keep it black and white.
Right.
Poison, am I eating poison or am I not eating poison?
Right.
11th step.
Can I ask a question before we go on
the step? Yes, ma'am.
So something you said, you know, the first time we do the steps, we do them, and then after that, we live them. So
eventually, as you work on these things.
So I'm still in my first run through the steps. How do you know when it's time for you to start over?
Immediately.
After you finish step 12, you start step 1 again.
Of course. Of course.
I don't know.
Yes. Absolutely. The only one that we do perfectly, have to do perfectly, is step one, because if we forget step one, it's just a matter of time before you start eating again. All the others we continue to work on. But, you know, if you're working with a sponsee on the steps, then you're working these steps all the time. You're learning, you're passing it on. Right? So, again, eventually you get out of the mentality of, is it starting over? Is it starting over? It just becomes working and living the things that are talking about, they're talking about here. But the answer is, we never stop. That's my perspective. I never stop. It's worked for me for a bunch of years. So I'm not going to screw around with something that works.
Kind of get
for mentioning, do you find that it's effective if you're sort of, tend to be, I feel like I tend to be working on any of those things. In just daily living, it seems like for making the amends and we're helping other people. And it, to me, I always felt like I had this back in my mind, am I doing it right? Because if I think of steps as a staircase, I'm not really going 1, 2, 3.
Right.
But it's like I'm always doing 1, 2, 3 by
yes.
doing, but then I'm also doing 11 and 10. I feel like I'm always working on them. They're sort of like in parallel, but I'm never doing it.
Right.
Once after the initial first time, I feel like I'm never, and is that okay?
Yes, absolutely. Eventually you'll get to where you're going.
All of them, I guess.
The question that I ask people, when there's somebody standing in front of me, well, I used the word I was about to use, whining. that's not a diplomatic word. But somebody's standing in me talking about whining, it doesn't, blah, blah, it doesn't work, I'm not doing this and then. My first question is always, okay, what step are you working on? You know what the answer is about 99% of the time? Well, not really any step. Oh, okay, so you're not working the program. Why is it you expect it to work if you're not working the program? That is a tough love approach, but it's the truth. If you're not working on something in the program. So also when problems come up, I say, okay, ask yourself, what step applies? What tradition applies? What slogan applies? Because these five philosophies of living and dealing with life right here apply to almost all situations and can take the edge off and give you some feeling of what it is to do. So that's always the first question I ask people to do. The steps apply to life, so what step applies? And that gets them to thinking about, okay, what step should I look at? Is it about acceptance? Is it about trust? Is it about faith? Is it about willingness to be, you know, step six is about willingness. Is it about willingness to be open to new things, to new ideas? Eight is about self-discipline and forgiveness. Am I stuck in that? Nine is about unconditional love. Am I just being angry and not loving and not accepting these people, etc.? Yes?
What step am I on? I always don't know how to answer that question because I've gotten through six, like seven is an ongoing thing. So mm-hmm. I always go 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay.
I mean, and then, and actually having done that, I'm actually gone back and revisited step one just because I thought it was a good way to
ramp sure.
up. But it's not like it's one, you know, it's like if somebody asks me what step I'm on, it's not like
right. anything. But you're probably not in front of them telling that the program isn't working for you and you're eating your head off. Right, because...
That's the point.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely. But that's... No, that's the point. If people are working in this stuff, things, good things happen. So, always got to be in the front of your mind. Mike.
Yeah. Well, I think by definition, you can't ever finish the first 12 steps, right? Because you get to, once you get to 9, 10 through 12 is a permanent cycle.
Grow. You got to continue to grow.
So to me, there is no going back because you never left.
You're always, if you have this disease, you're always on a down escalator going up. You have to keep moving, doing, acting, growing. That's my experience. If you ask me how I've stayed abstinent and how I've continued to survive and do and live life, I would say that I just keep doing it. And a very, very big part of me holding on to the gifts that I've been giving, and you've heard it 16 million times, it's a cliche, but it is. Being of assistance, being of help, mm-hmm. passing it on. You think that you're here this weekend for you, but my wife and I know that I'm here this weekend for me because this helps me. This helps me keep on a straight line while all that other shit is going on in my life. So as I might have said last night, I don't know if I said it in the big room or to somebody in a smaller conversation, from time to time my wife will say, have you got any retreats coming up? You get it. But it is true. You know, it sounds cliche-ish and humorous, but it's what does it. Passing it on is what allows me to hold on to it. Giving the gift away that I've received is what allows me to hold on. And that's the 12th step. Service is gratitude in action. Service is gratitude in action. Service is not optional. Service is what we have to do. If you're not giving service, then you're not working the program, and that sooner or later it's going to get you. Sooner or later it will come back at you and bite you, and you'll be back in the food. So those people that think they go to the 12th step and graduate, no. There is no graduation. And if you don't do the service. Now, we all have different, obviously skipped over the 11th. We'll come back to the 11th. We all have different levels of service that we can give. I happen to be in a position to give a lot of service because I'm retired. And, you know, I have an income. I'm retired. So I can do what is good for me and what's useful, makes me feel useful. So I give a lot of service in all levels of the program, including these retreats. I don't do these retreats a lot. This is like maybe two, three. I've averaged over a year. But I do lots of service in intergroup. I sponsor four people all the time through the steps. That's my limit. And so I'm in a position to give the service. But many of you, you know, there may be a single mom in here that works full-time, da-da-da-da-da, and you don't have the time to do the kind of service that I do, but you can do something, right? The Mother Teresa thing, if you can't feed 100 people, just feed one. And that's the point. Do what you can do. And you don't have to go to intergroup to be of assistance to intergroup. You know, if somebody was volunteering, I can help with setting up a retreat or whatever. Well, you don't have to be an intergroup person, but you may be able to just be on that committee to help, give a few hours to help set up something or other. It's a whole different mindset. How can I be of use rather than how do I get? So we do what we can. Some can do a lot and some can do only a little. But if you can do a lot and you're only doing a little, it's only a matter of time before it will come back and bite you. In a big book someplace, the answer to the question, how much service should I give? It's something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, something to the effect, just up to the level where it hurts a little. Right? Where it's just a little sacrifice. When there's sacrifice, then you're probably doing enough. But don't kill yourself, because being who we are, we can get in over our heads. We can become so compulsive about the service that everything else. So I know I have seen service junkies who had a shit program, but they were in the service. And so they did all this stuff, but they weren't taking care of themselves. And it just didn't work. So sometimes we hear that slogan, service is slimming. Well, maybe sometimes it can be, but slimming. Right. It's never been one of my favorites, so you haven't heard me use it. That's not what service is all about. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have, in your experiences, like a little checklist in your brain of a question or a couple of questions you might ask yourself when you are wanting to do service, you know, leaning more toward being a service junkie? Because I think the hardest thing, you know, I would struggle with, or I do struggle with, is, okay, you know, I can do this, and I can do this, and I can do this, but, you know, I need to step back before I say
right.
Yes to something.
Balance is hard for us.
Yeah.
That's part of alignment for me, is being in balance and knowing where the limits are. That's part of the recovery, is knowing what I can and cannot do. Saying no, for some of us, is really, really hard. But recovery is learning when to say no, because it's not good for me. Because this level of work that you're talking about, you know, it can hurt over here. This is not going to be nurturing to my soul and my recovery. This is going to be too much. I don't need to do this. So I have to pay attention to the balance. Balance, 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 balance. When I talk about alignment, the generic definition of alignment for me that I use... Did I already say this?
No.
Okay. The generic definition I use for alignment is practicing abstinence, acceptance, gratitude, love, service. Abstinence, acceptance,
gratitude,
love, service, enthusiasm, balance. And being connected being connected. I just say being connected, but you understand I'm talking about being connected to higher power, my inner spirit. That's kind of my generic thing. It's in my head all the time. And it's a little inventory that's in my head all the time. How am I doing on this? Am I aligned? I do that very often in my notes in the morning. How am I aligned with this? Am I aligned? Now, I said it's my generic definition, right? You can get in, you got to get into specifics in your own life. But that's kind of my generic definition. Yes. Either one.
Well, just if I can share and add, I have learned, because I started to be on the service junkie, and service is I go through each service opportunity with my sponsor. So I go through with somebody else before I
Good idea. Yes, ma'am.
When is a person ready to become a sponsor? For instance,
when somebody asks them.
When
somebody asks you.
Mm-hmm. Even if they're barely abstinent?
Yeah. Even if they're not abstinent?
More than the first or second step?
Then you have to decide whether to say yes or no.
But how do you decide that?
In your heart, do you know?
Yes. I think I'm not ready.
Okay. Does your sponsor agree with you?
No. This weekend, I'm closer to being ready.
Yeah. It's not an easy, it's a flip answer. But we have lots of problems these days with not enough sponsors. As opposed to some of you, perhaps the HAL people here, maybe you work it this way. I don't know exactly what you're doing in your meetings. It differs all over. But in the old days, quote unquote, you got to the third step, man, you were a sponsor. 21 days absent, the third step, you stepped up. We had a little ceremony, and you were a sponsor. And if you didn't have a sponsee, then we would introduce you to a sponsee. Mm-hmm. And you started immediately to give service up to the level of. And if you look at the OA literature, there's two pamphlets on sponsorship. One is the sponsor's guide, it says, and the other one is sponsoring through the steps with your sponsee. If you look at those, that phrase is used in there, up to the level of. So I'm going to tell you, somebody with 3 weeks of abstinence and 3 weeks in the program knows a lot more than that person who is walking in the door, scared to death, has no clue what this is all about, is just terrified. You've got something to share with that person. Now, you can't tell somebody how to do a four-step, but you can say, well, you know, I've only been here 3 weeks, but this is what I'm doing. And boy, oh boy, this is feeling good. So you got something to give. So it seems to me that we've kind of evolved in the program to this more and more people not sponsoring until they think they're at some imaginary level of perfection. And that kills us.
Mm-hmm.
Personal opinion, that kills us. You've got something to give. You've got something to give right in the very beginning. Abstinence, though, you know, back to the abstinence. That doesn't mean 6 months, a year, 15 years of abstinence. That means some period. And the old magic number was 21 days. Who knows? 3 weeks. But everybody in here that's been, just you remember back to when you started getting abstinent. Remember how different you felt just at the end of 3 weeks?
Yep.
Right? You were feeling really, really different.
Yep.
What you've got to give to that newcomer who's just walking through the door is HOPE.
Mm-hmm.
And that's enough to keep somebody coming back to the next meeting. Mm-hmm. Saying, I don't understand any of this crap, but I don't know. There's a lady that says, wow.
What's the difference between excitement and enthusiasm? It says on page 80 of the big book, it talks about... we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions.
Yeah, enthusiasm is controlled excitement. Right? I'm enthusiastic about the program. I'm enthusiastic about giving service. But excitement can be frenzied,
mm-hmm.
as in crazy, mind running in all directions. Right? Excitement can lead to insanity
mm-hmm.
and stupid things. Yes. This has turned into a morning Q&A here.
Yeah.
So I guess that's not bad. We'll go where you want to go.
In getting back to the sponsorship,
yeah.
My sponsor, when I stepped up, my sponsor, I'm in HAL, and she said to, and I like this idea, she said just when someone asks you to be a sponsor, say, how about if I be your temp sponsor to see how our personalities work?
Yes.
And whenever my sponsor has a question that I don't know, I would say, well, let me check with my sponsor, or you check with some other sponsors. So it was daunting to me to begin with, but, you know, obviously people come to you because they like what you have. So
yep. Okay. One more, and then we got to talk some about the 11th step.
Yes.
And go to a breakout.
I've been in these rooms for almost 20 years, and I, was told, a step a week, 21 days of abstinence, and it's time for you to sponsor. So I come from the old school. I'm not perfect. I've relapsed in this program, but I understand what Don had to say, that because that's how AA did it. You got abstinent, worked the steps, you sponsored. And I just can't. Sponsorship is so important for this WE program. It's not about me, it's about WE. And I can't do it alone.
Okay. I want to say, before we go into the session, I want to cover very quickly some 11th and 12th step. We've talked about the service part. Remember, 12th step is three parts. Mm-hmm. Having had a spiritual awakening, tried to carry this message, practice these principles. So we'll come back and talk more about the principles after the break. But let me talk a little bit about the 11th step now. Feel compelled. Since this is the most material in this book about is the 11th step. You have in your handouts the outline of the 11th step process, the process that I use based upon the big book 86 to 88. Now, this is Don's process, except the things in the boxes, not in the boxes is Don. The things in the boxes are the things that the big book suggested I do. Right? So it tells me on awakening. This is the prayer that I use. It says, I say, good morning, God. Thank you for the gift of another day. Help me not waste it. Grant me the discipline to be productive, useful, power to remain abstinent. And then there's the phrase out of the big book. Keep me free of self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. What does that mean? For Don, what that means. This sheet, by the way, this is a sheet that's in my journal all the time. And sometimes if I don't have time to read books, any of the daily reading books, I just pull this out. Because in here is the extended outline of this one pager. This one pager is basically an outline of these eight pages that I have in front of me. And what do those phrases mean to me? Well, for me personally, right, when it says, keep me free of self-pity, what that means to me is no complaining, no blaming, no playing victim, no as soon as thinking, or if only thinking, or someday thinking. Suffering is not a virtue. Martyrdom is stupid, as I said yesterday. So that's where I remind myself, no complaining, playing victim. And I used to be a real big, big one on the as soon as she dies, everything will be great. If only he would, if only they would. Forget the if onlys, the as soon as's, or the somedays. Get out of it and get in today. What can be done today? Get off with the pity pot. Charlie used to say you have a brown ring around your butt. It's true. Charlie had a way with words. Sitting on the pity pot. So that's the negative side of the self-pity. I like to emphasize the positive. So in the self-pity thing, I turn it into the positive and say, I am responsible for my life and for how I feel. I am free to choose. Life is unfair and insecure, and that's just the way it is. Make peace with it. Seize opportunities. Life is unfair and insecure, so make peace with it.
Could you repeat that, or is that in here?
That's not in your handle.
What else is it besides unfair?
Insecure. I said that yesterday. You were taking notes. Life is unfair and insecure. Live with it. Deal with it. It just is. Easy to say, not so hard to do, but you can begin to do it. All you have to do is live in the slogans one day at a time and quit putting expectations out there. Just let go. Go with the flow. Live it. And then it says, first it says, direct my thinking, keep it free of self-pity. Then it says, dishonest or self-seeking motives. Dishonest motives for me. On the negative side, I say no denial of the fatal nature of my disease. No compromising or rationalizing about my food. Let go of the dream that someday I'll be able to eat like normal eaters. At least sometimes. Let go of it. It's not true. Or that my problem isn't really so serious, that I just have a little issue with food that will take care of itself over time. That will kill me. That is dishonest thinking. Remember, first step is about getting honest with myself. Self-honest, self-honest, self-honest. That negative statement turned into a positive is this. Important statement for me. I accept that I have the disease of compulsive eating and am addicted to certain foods and eating behaviors. I cannot and never will be able to deal with food the way normal eaters do. I need a structured plan of eating and a way of thinking and living that keep me in fit spiritual condition. All right? So, be honest with myself. I need a structured plan of eating and a way of dealing with food and dealing with people that keep me in fit spiritual condition. The second part of dishonesty that I have to work with, and remember, this is Don's stuff now. I'm just sharing Don's stuff. For you, it may could be different. No dishonesty with myself through rationalizing or justifying. You know, rationalizing is, justifying is convincing you that my lies are true. Rationalizing is convincing me that my lies are true. Right? So, no dishonesty with others, no pretending, no phoniness, no mask wearing, no role playing to appease, manipulate, or avoid. This leaves me feeling empty, drained, and ashamed. And that's where I was when I came to the program. No integrity, always on stage, always being a phony, always an actor. Yes, ma'am.
Last night you said something about your daughter and you helping her out because of a grandchild. Okay? I know exactly what you're talking about. But I was told that I'm enabling my son to continue his, and isn't that kind of like wearing a mask if I know I'm enabling him but I'm saving him?
I'm saving my grandchildren. This was the dilemma that I have gone through over and over and over. Where is the enabling stop? And where, am I enabling, etc.? And I've been over and over and over and have to make. I wish life were really black and white. But I made the choice, well, the grandchildren are not responsible. They need not suffer. They should not suffer. They need every opportunity to have a better life. To not literally not have enough to eat, to not be milk in the refrigerator, etc. And they have been in that position. And I made the decision, whether it's enabling or not, I'm going to pay the rent and I'm going to send X dollars. And so, yes, it is. But life is full of those difficult choices. Let me go on in the interest of time.
You know what? When we do what's right in our hearts from love, it's really good.
How do I know it's God's will for me? I have a little measure. I say, if by doing this, it's likely to result in me, one, feeling self-respect, two, is loving to others, and three, is likely to leave me feeling peaceful instead of conflicted, then it's probably aligned with God's will.
Well, do you have a question that, I know sometimes I feel responsible and guilty for the way my son is today because of the way I raised him. So
right.
Sometimes out of
right,
oh.
Right, no, not for 25 years. I gave it away. Okay. You know, when they become an adult, they're responsible. I made my amends. I've done everything that I can to help in my living amends. But there's no more guilt and shame. I let go of all that in the fifth step and the ninth step, and I cleaned that up years ago. Right. No, it's not there anymore.
Don, you hear if we see point C
C is chapter.
Chapter, yes. Step. I've given you the exact spot.
I think S is step.
S is step. Tells you what step is in, what chapter, and what page, and sometimes what paragraph. Yeah. So the positive side of all that dishonesty stuff is be honest with myself and others, be authentic, be who I am, keep my outward behavior aligned with my inner. Then the self-seeking. Now I'm about to disclose some more stuff. But it's not none of the top five stuff. No, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you 3, 4, and 5. Only in private, in a fifth step. Self-seeking. What does that mean to me? Self-seeking motives. Watch out that I'm not simply seeking to get my way through various types of controlling or manipulation. And then I'm really good at manipulation through pouting, through quiet, you know, through other ways. And I'll bet many of you are too. Right? And underneath of all that, you're just trying to get your way. Just that is self-seeking. Watch out for creating unrealistic or impossible expectations in my head about what others ought to do. And here's what I was talking about. Watch out that I don't fall back into an excessive pursuit of approval or affirmation or fame or love and glory and acclaim and ego gratification. Because I think, and I have said, I know in my story, that I spent my life chasing strokes. I spent my life looking for you to validate me, say, I was okay, I'm okay. You love me, I'm great, etc. And, approval thing. Watch out I don't fall back into an excessive pursuit of approval or affirmation or love or glory. Let go of the self-consciousness and guardedness. Believe it or not, I spent my life totally self-conscious and guarded, and I couldn't talk. I know that could be hard for you to believe.
Even harder for Kimberly.
But I could not really talk and share because I was so afraid that you might see into me and see the truth. So it was always guarded, always guarded, always guarded. In my head, I was always calculating what I was going to say and the effect that it could have on you. So I looked at the effect I wanted to have and then calculated what I want to say. That is so tiring. It sets you a waste of energy rather than just being authentic and be real. So I base my day and life on selfless love and service and learning, as I've said before, and the other principles of the steps, traditions, and slogans. Practice selflessness rather than selfishness. Seek to align my will with God's will in all my thinking. Live every day the way I think God wants me to live. Constantly ask, how may I be of service to you, God? And the 11th step prayer, the net of that is seek to comfort and understand and to love rather than to be comforted, understood, and loved. So part of my ritual every morning, and we run out of time, so I'm going to not go through all this other 11-step stuff, but you've got some material in there. Part of my ritual every morning is saying the 3rd-step prayer, the 7th-step prayer, and the 11th-step prayer. Yes?
You've got plan my day, write it down, a POE.
Plan of eating?
Oh, and a PFD.
Plan for the day.
Okay, great. Got it.
Plan for the day is food.
No, POE is plan of eating. So I do 2 lists. If you looked at my, it's in my briefcase, I won't pull it out, but if you look at my journal, I'm doing my plan for the day on one side, and over here in the little corner is the plan of eating. So structure. It works for me. It's part of my morning thing. God's answers come through a lot of different ways. Just throw out a couple of things here. God's answers, I believe. Remember, I said the shorthand for my 11th step is find God, see what He has to say, then do it. So I believe God's answers come through a lot of different ways. I have to be attuned to the channel that God is on. And God can be on a lot of different channels, the God of my understanding. God's answers can come through my mind. He may plant. When I say He, it's just a way of me saying it. I don't have a masculine thing of God. If we get time later, I'll just go through my spiritual principles with you, but I say He, it's easier. He plants ideas, broadens my perspective, widens my vision when I pray. Remember, pray is just talking to, coming in contact with. Meditation is listening. We call them daily meditation books because it's another kind of meditation. I'm reflecting on the idea. Those books are all truth books. In every page, there's a basic truth about something. So the way I use those daily meditation books is to see what's the basic truth on that page. For me, reflect on it. How does this apply to me? Or does it? Is there some way that I need to work on this basic truth and apply it to my life? So that's reflection type of meditation. The emptying out kind of meditation, the Zen meditation, is a whole different game. That's the sitting quietly and trying to empty out, empty out, out, empty out. And if we had time, I would take you through the visual thing that I do, and you would all be very relaxed and very asleep, but we don't have time for that.
Could you repeat that? You said plants ideas, broadens my perspective.
Broadens my perspective, widens my vision. God's answers can come through my will, in that He may strengthen my will, give me courage. God's answers can come through my emotions. He can calm. Prayer can calm and comfort. And that's a kind of God's answer. God's answers can come through my imagination. He may stimulate some vision out of nowhere. I just get suddenly an idea. He can come from my memory. God stimulates some sort of stored memory. There have been about 3 or 4 times in my 70 years when I have really felt, I'll use the word touched, really in contact. All of those periods were in the forest, in the fields, you know, blazing fields or in the pine forest, and once on a sand dune on Cape Cod. Well, there was nobody within miles and miles. It happened to be February. And who would be in Cape Cod in February?
God.
Very good. Very good. So, anyway, those 3 or 4 instances in my life were very, very special. And even thinking about it, I can feel something special at this very moment. Yes. And that's a stored memory that I don't think about. It's not something that comes to mind for any particular reason, except when I might really need it. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, that memory comes up and I can remember, okay, don't doubt. Don't doubt. Have faith. Something is there. I just need to do whatever I need to do to nurture that connection. So God can come through a lot of different ways. And the last one on the list, and you know this one, if we pay attention, it can come through others. It's been said that we are the only hands that God has. So listen, watch what it is that others are doing. And what really ticks me off is that sometimes the answers come through the people that I least want to hear it from. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
God has a sense of humor.
A sense of humor really ticks me off.
His jokes are worse than
yours. His jokes.
His jokes are more meaningful.
Yes. Every once in a while he says, hey, dummy. So, pay attention. Let me just say one last thing about God. The God of my understanding, definition of God. I wasted so many years trying to figure out this whole God thing. You know, what it is, how it works, what it is. And I don't know, I wrote this probably 10 years ago, just one little paragraph. Definition of God. However I define God is God. It's the God of my understanding. No one can truly prove one way or the other. Science says I can't prove what I believe. I say they can't prove what I believe is false. Each religion says its way is the only way, but they can't prove it either. So we're forever and ever and ever at an impasse. But what difference does it make what my belief is? It's whatever gives me comfort, strength, and direction. It doesn't have to be consistent and logical. I can call it spirit of the universe and still say it's a personal God manifested within me as truth, goodness, and love. Or I can just say God is the unseeable spirit that connects all living things. God is how things work. I have a whole series of synonyms that I used over the years trying to figure this thing out. And I finally, as I said the other night, I think, just finally decided this. It doesn't make any difference. Whatever works for me, whatever you believe. You know, your higher power is whatever you turn to in times of stress. And for many of us, the greatest higher power we've ever had is food. But it failed us. Didn't work. There are other higher powers. Ultimately, there's this thing we call God. But it can be anything that works for you. It can be the meetings. It can be the collective power of the fellowship, of the steps, of the process. It can be anything you want, as long as it takes you in the direction that you feel is right. So I gave up trying to figure it out, and defining it. For a long time in the beginning, my first higher power was really my sponsor. Then it was a food plan. Then it became the big book. Then it became role models in the rooms. Today it's closer to the whole 12-step collective fellowship. It's closer to that, but yet even underneath that, I think that the first article of my principles, of nine principles that I believe that have evolved over the years, is that I believe that one of the manifestations of God is this quiet spirit within me of truth, goodness, and love that is linked to and part of the spirit of the universe, which is God. Which means, and this is the important part, that I am in God and God is in me. So my job is to try to stay connected and, back to that word I used, aligned with this. All right.
Can I ask one question?
One question.
You said your higher power is anything that gives you comfort, strength, and
hope, direction, courage, a lot of different things.
Okay.
All right. What do we want to do now? Where is my outline? Okay, it's 10:15. So we have given pretty short thrift to 10, 11, well, 10 we covered, and we talked a lot about the service part. So we haven't really talked about the principles, practicing these principles, but hopefully over the course of this weekend you begin to see what the principles are all about. But you know, there's a lot of different ways of defining principles. The OA 12 Entails has this list of 19 moral principles behind the steps and traditions. You know, as you go through those, it's step by step by step by step. So honesty, first step, hope, third step, faith, fourth step, courage, fifth step, integrity, sixth step, willingness, seventh step, humility, eighth step, self-discipline and forgiveness, ninth, unconditional love, tenth step, perseverance to keep doing the things that we did, spiritual development in 11, and service in step 12. And then there's seven other things that encompass the 12 traditions. fellowship.
19.
Okay, fellowship, equality, responsibility, trust, open-mindedness, unity. Missing one.
Acceptance.
All right. Close. Now you combine all those things together and there's some real guidelines. There's a real roadmap for how you should live your life. But there can be other sets of principles if you really look at the steps, like that ongoing acceptance of what is, that ongoing acceptance of people as they are. The slogans in themselves are the basic philosophy of the program. So there's lots of different ways of looking at the principles for living that you find in here, which is why the 12-step program has been called from time to time a distillation of the wisdom of the universe that's basically evolved over the lifetime of mankind. And if you study comparative religions, you will find remarkable similarities religion to religion about living and how we live. And the commonality that the Big Book talks about, and which I use as the basis of my life, is love and service. So it's all about us, brotherhood, being of service to each other. Nothing seems to feel any more aligned with purpose than love and service, and I add learning to that for me. I used to say growing, but learning, growing, keeping going. So, distillation of the wisdom of the ages. Seems to work. All right. We're going to break into groups. It's 10:20. We're going to do a 40-minute breakout. So just take a very quick, go to the bathroom, get a drink, whatever, and then go directly to your breakouts. Okay? And in your breakout groups, I want you to answer this really, really easy question.
Set up.
The question is, has two parts. First part, what do I think is God's will for me? Part two, what do I think is not God's will for me? Okay. Break. Reconvene here promptly, if you want the humor, at 11 o'clock. Yes?
Could I just ask everybody to give me their cards, please?
Okay. Give your cards on the way out. If you're not done, give them to her. 11 o'clock, reconvene.